I'm now much more confident to say that we will be able to use the gait analysis to start picking up those grade one, grade two osteoarthritis cases where there is no bony change, but we've got inflammation, we've got decreased range of motion, we've got offloading, we've got pain, but the dog is just covering it really well. And those are the really exciting ones for me because that's where we can really, really have an effect.
You are listening to the Veterinary Osteoarthritis Alliance podcast. This is a great way to stay up to date with veterinary OA, especially when you're on the move. VOA is a multidisciplinary, non-profit organization that aims to encourage collaboration between all those involved in veterinary OA care. On the VOA podcast, we invite guests to discuss all aspects of veterinary OA. These range from prominent experts and academics in the field to vets, vet nurses, and physiotherapists working in practice. The VOA podcast has something for everyone, no matter your experience, qualifications, or discipline. The VOA is independent of any commercial interests. We do, however, receive sponsorship from various sources for which we are very grateful and clearly state when this is the case. We hope that you find the information discussed interesting and useful. If you do, please subscribe to the show and feel free to share the links with your friends and colleagues. Thanks once again for listening to the VOA podcast. Welcome to the Veterinary Osteoarthritis Alliance podcast. I'm Russell Chandler, and today I'm delighted to have with me Drew Tootle, who is a vet who's had a long career in the army and in lame dogs and in osteoarthritis. So I'm very, very interested to find out what he's got to tell us about how he goes about diagnosing and managing osteoarthritis in dogs. So Drew graduated from Liverpool Vet School in 2004 and then went straight into the Royal Army Veterinary Corps, where he has had a long career working with military dogs, selecting them for training, looking after them during their time in service, and even then deploying them to places like Iraq. For 6.5 years, he was in command of the Veterinary Training Squadron at the Defence Animal Training Regiment in Melton Mowbray, caring for the regiment's dogs and horses and being a referral centre for all of Defence's working dogs across the UK and the deployed overseas animals. So the breeds that he's looked after are Labradors, Spaniels, German Shepherds, plus a few unusual ones like Irish Wolfhounds and even a German Yag Terrier. Some of the most enjoyable times that Drew has spent in the army has been caring for the old and bold dogs as they prepare to leave the service and become family pets. He's done lameness assessments, radiographic surveys, looking for signs of osteoarthritis, coming up with treatment and exercise plans, and managing the work and training, tailor-making a holistic plan for each dog. So Drew has a passion for improving the quality of life of dogs, and he's excited to be able to partake in Nupsala's musculoskeletal clinic, whose goal is to help to improve the treatment and management of chronic pain. When he's not at work, Drew and his wife, and she's also a vet, try to keep up with their two young children, and they enjoy travel, natural history, and generally being outdoors. Welcome, Drew.
Thank you very much for having me.
Is there anything there that I've left out?
No, I don't think so. I think that sounds very grandiose career. It was considerably less interesting than that at times.
So obviously, Drew, from your professional background, I guess dealing with working dogs in the army, that's really how you got interested in the whole field of osteoarthritis and chronic pain.
Yeah, I think working dogs are a very particular challenge. And certainly, I think that I performed more clinical exams on absolutely normal dogs than most vets in the UK, because it's absolutely, the whole idea of veterinary medicine within the military is to keep the animals working, keep them on the road, keep them comfortable and happy. So I think that led to a very early appreciation of what is normal in dog gait, ambulation, work, work patterns, training, and then that sort of quite early pickups on the very subtle tells of osteoarthritis. And then it was sort of, it's really interesting, it's a really interesting conundrum that you then face with a working dog, because if they are fulfilling a very, very important task, and some of these dogs were fulfilling sort of life-saving work, both in the UK and overseas, how do you keep that? How do you keep that dog comfortable, and how do you keep it happy and working, but at the same time have, you know, keep it welfare friendly so that it's not impacting on the dog? And that led to the challenge of trying to work out ways of managing the exercise, really thinking about, you know, weight management, lifestyle changes, training changes, in addition to those sort of more traditional modalities of pain relief and things like that, and the radiographic surveys. So my association with the working dogs was really right from 12 to 18 months when we recruited them, and looking at their radiographs and seeing how they progressed, right up to when they came out of service, and then dealing with those issues, and making a plan that. What we didn't want to do was create a hospital pass for the new owner and say, well, there's your dog, but unfortunately it's got all this terrible osteoarthritic change, but we can't do anything about it. So we needed to do something. And it's been interesting sort of working with, my career is more with the dogs. So working with the equine, my equine colleagues within the military who had much more positive and forward-reaching approach to gait analysis and intra-articular therapy than I did within the dogs, because it just wasn't a thing. It just wasn't something that really came across to us. So that kind of led to this natural progression of, you know, the stars aligning, really, me coming towards the end of my military service, and then this opportunity coming up in Uppsala.
Excellent. So now that you're in Civvy Street, presumably you're doing a similar kind of work to what you were doing, or certainly the military experience that you had working with those dogs was a great grounding for what you're doing. So what are the differences, do you think, with the civilian pet dogs compared to, say, the working dogs as regards their joint health?
There's actually a lot of similarities. I think there's a common misconception that military dogs or military anything have these sort of very specific injuries. And in reality, it's not. There's a real parity between the two. It's wear and tear. There are some things that we used to find very, that we would see commonly associated with some breeds. We would often see, say, for instance, large breeds doing protection type work, though we would often see lumbar sacral disease in those, and then we would have to manage that. But in terms of sort of elbow arthritis, hip arthritis, cruciate disease, they're all very, very similar.
Excellent. So now you're in the Uppsala clinic in Leicestershire. And the Uppsala clinic, the MSK clinic, was set up, as I understand it, purely for the furtherance of the discipline of diagnosis and treatment of dogs, mainly dogs, with musculoskeletal diseases.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously that's a great sort of leap forward in terms of, you know, having a dedicated clinic for that. What sort of equipment and technology have you got there that maybe wouldn't be found in an ordinary clinic?
So the main thing that we pin our approach on is on objective gait analysis. So the traditional approach, the paradigm that everyone recognizes within veterinary medicine of dog goes lame, try some anti-inflammatories, dog does or does not get better, next stage is plain radiography, and then advanced imaging, surgery, etc. And then along the way, this development of multimodal analgesia plans. The bit that we fit in is somewhere between the GP vet that's done the multimodal, established a multimodal plan, and done plain radiographs. But before they've then gone to the more specialist advanced imaging modalities, and before they've gone down the sort of the nuclear option of surgery. So in that quite narrow niche, that's where the Nupsala clinic fits in. Now, what we do is it's in two parts. The first is this sort of baseline analysis. So by using, we're very fortunate, we've got three instrumented treadmills in the UK. And this is the only one that I believe that's being used specifically for clinical facing work rather than research academic type work. And the beauty of it is that with relatively short time investment and a relatively short effort from the dog, you can get a raft of data, and that then allows us to track progression. And that progression can be in relation to anything that you've done. So it might be you run the dog, but the dog's overweight, it's got a body condition score of say 8. And when I say run, that 8 might involve a slow amble. With a relatively, it's just 30 seconds of runtime on the treadmill. And then that provides us with this objective data. And that's the key to everything that we do. So we still follow up with sort of other objective measures such as goniometry. We use passive stance analysis. We'll also use them sort of more subjective, so clinical metrics. So things like we use the AMOA arthritis, online arthritis management tool. And that whole picture provides you a baseline. Now, the important thing is that for gait analysis, there's no reference range. So a 8-year-old Labrador weighing 30 kilos that's male, neutered with bilateral hip dysplasia shouldn't have a step length of X. It is just every dog is unique to itself. And so what we do is by carefully recording and controlling the speed at which we perform the data collection, we effectively use each dog as its own control. So if you take a dog that's condition score 8 and you run it at 6 kilometers an hour on the flat, and you have a stride length of say 70 centimeters and pressure loading of whatever percentage. If you then get that dog to lose 10% of its body weight without doing anything else, you can actually then run it again and see, you know, potentially that stride length has increased to 80 centimeters and the pressure loading is equalized. So it's very much a case of establish a baseline using the objective measures and then work out a treatment strategy that's right for that dog and right for that owner as well. A lot of the dogs that we've had are already quite a long way on their arthritis journey. And I do describe it as a journey. And I'm really careful to sort of make sure that our clients, the owners are really bought into that idea. A lot of them already are, but a lot of them still don't. They still seem to be under the impression that there is a golden, there's the silver bullet for arthritis. There's something that will just fix everything, make it go away. And they have to be invested in this journey idea. And so by doing that objective data at set times, actually they can see their own improvements. So if they have done really well to make the dog lose 10% of its body weight, and then they can see the results standing there, you know, the data analysis is instantaneous. So as soon as you finish the collection, you can look at the data and go, look at that, you have done this. And that really, really buys in a lot of commitment from the owners as well. So and that's quite powerful, I think.
Yeah. So if I could just pick up on a few things there, Drew. So definitely getting buy-in from the owners, that's going to be a crucial piece of the puzzle, isn't it, really? And yeah, so they have to, as you've said, they have to be sold on the idea that, you know, data collection is worthwhile, because I'm guessing this takes quite a long time to do.
I think the reality is that, you know, we sit in this niche, and the traditional paradigm, and this is not a fault issue, this is purely the pressures of the industry, the profession we work in. The 15-minute consult cannot handle arthritis management to what it needs to be. But that is the realities of life. And my wife, as I say, she works in companion animal practice, and I see through her the pressures. So our consults take an hour for the initial consult. Now, the bit that you would think would be the real problematic bit of actually getting the dog onto the treadmill, our experience now of several hundred runs, is that it's not that much of a problem. I've had two absolute categorical refusals. No way. One of which was a massive, roughy-tufty army dog who just said, "No, this is not happening." But with just a little bit of familiarization training, and because of that, because we have this hour, we can take a very hands-off, relaxed, gentle approach. You know, it's not about localizing the pain. You know, very quick, hurry, hurry. It's just about the dog needs to be relaxed. The more relaxed the dog is, the better the data collection will be. And so with that approach, by the time we've just done a little bit of data recording, a little bit of sort of familiarization, the data recording is just 30 seconds. And then it takes longer to go through the report with the owner than it does to actually collect the data itself. So it has to be that hour, I think, to really do it justice and to really, again, explain. A lot of owners, they don't understand necessarily how their dog has got to this point, especially if the lameness has started relatively recently, and they don't understand why something that they think is only 3 months old, but when they've seen the radiographs, they see these really, really massive changes, and that doesn't compute to them. So explaining that, explaining how arthritis works, and explaining what then are potential therapies and how they might benefit their dog or their animal, that just takes time.
Absolutely. So, Drew, from the point of view of novel treatments or any treatment for osteoarthritis, really, one of the problems we have is trying to determine, you know, how well it's working, or is it working, or is there a better thing that we could be doing? So it seems to me that having these objective data from the treadmill and the other, you know, devices that you might have are a very, very useful way of providing the data and the evidence for basically improving what we do as clinicians. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, 100%. But I'll take that even further and say that it's the more that we for the purposes of pure transparency, I claim no specialist status on this. I have no qualifications in gait analysis, etc. What I do have is 17 years of looking at working dogs' gaits and normal gaits and abnormal gaits. And then the technology of the gait analysis treadmill ties that together. And the interesting thing that we found is that when the Nupsala clinic was set up, we thought that it would be primarily, you know, the older, you know, significantly osteoarthritic animal And it would purely be about just managing that dog and making it more comfortable. And we've actually seen the results on that through the treadmill very, very clearly. You know, we can track significant offloading. So one of the measures is called a symmetry index. So it is a calculated measure of how symmetrically the forelimbs are being used in relation to each other and the hind limbs. And anything over 5%, we consider lame. And that is to say it is asymmetrical. So we can't make the jump between asymmetry and pain. That needs to be through the clinical exam. But we can get 5 to 10% offloading. We can get 5 to 10% offloading and symmetry indices of 5, 8, 10% where the dog is not visibly lame. And that has been an absolute game changer because we can see, we know when the dog comes in and it's 4/5 lame and we run it on the treadmill, we do the intervention, and then the dog comes in the next time and it's 2/5 lame and the pressure has improved and we see the balance improve. That's almost easy. Now we've got really, really good data to see how to show how that's improved. The really exciting bit for me, this is my real passion, is those non-visible lamenesses. So if we have the dog that's doing something just a bit odd, and that actually in some of the cases that we've had have been referred to us by behaviorists, saying, could you just check before we go down this sort of really hefty behavioral modification pathway, can we just check it's not pain? And we go on the treadmill and we go, it is subtle, but that has given us the confidence to go, I think we need to investigate this dog. I think we need to potentially do radiographs or do comparative synovial fluid analysis, compare left and right and see if one is inflamed. And if you do have the weight of that objective data behind you, it gives you the confidence to say, I think there's something going on there. And let's explore and let's investigate. And I'm now much more confident to say that we will be able to use the gait analysis to start picking up those grade 1, grade 2 osteoarthritis cases where there is no bony change, but we've got inflammation, we've got decreased range of motion, we've got offloading, we've got pain, but the dog is just covering it really well. And those are the really exciting ones for me because that's where we can really, really have an effect.
So in essence, Drew, what you're doing is you are getting milder cases diagnosed, earlier cases diagnosed, younger cases diagnosed. I think a lot of people, especially owners, think that osteoarthritis is going to be an old dog disease and they're going to be 10 plus years old and pretty decrepit by that time and there's not much that could be done for them. But what you're doing by having this technology is you are moving the population to a younger dog that is much earlier in that osteoarthritis journey, earlier diagnosis at an earlier stage of the disease. That's got to improve the prognosis, one would think.
I think it has to, purely intuitively and based on the science that we have so far. If you can modify the joint environment before you have physical changes of remodeling, then you must be able to improve the outcome. The bit that's missing is the long-term evidence. So long-term clinical outcomes are the therapies that we utilize in companion animals are well established in equine medicine, have been for 10 years plus. They are only now starting to filter into companion animal medicine. And what we're hoping is that by keeping the data and being able to interrogate this data as we go along, we can start to provide that evidence to say, yes, that maybe there is a possibility for an algorithm. Maybe that one-year-old spaniel with very early stage elbow dysplasia, that could actually respond to conservative treatment. I think one of my biggest frustrations, I think, has been the normalization of osteoarthritis in companion animals. Pain and lameness is just not tolerated in equine practice. If you see a horse that is limping, that horse is to the owners is of no use. It is of no, and they will do anything really early on to try and fix that. Whereas when I see the animal that's limping, see the dog that's limping, or the cat that is unable to groom itself, or unable to toilet properly because of hip pain, but it's become normalized both by the owners and to a certain extent by the profession, where it is to be expected. And we will just try these things and see if it works. But if it doesn't work, then it's nothing more that we can do. And that's the really exciting, that's another really exciting bit for me of, we don't have to accept that, you know, just what the multimodal approach is it. There is something else, and that's where our evidence will come in for retrospective analysis over time. Mm-hmm.
That is the end of the first part of the conversation that I had with Drew Tootle, former Army vet and now MSK vet, on osteoarthritis. Stay tuned for the next episode coming soon. Looking to refer an osteoarthritis case? Look no further than our sponsor, the Nupsala MSK Clinic. This referral centre in Leicestershire offers state-of-the-art facilities and a multidisciplinary team to deliver cutting-edge OA care to dogs and cats. Visit the website www.nupsala-msk.co.uk or click the link at the end of this podcast.